Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Margarita Engel and Rafael Lopez, a poet who paints in words and truth and voice, an artist who writes in colors, in contrast, in strength. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner, and I had such a great time meeting so many of you at the New Jersey SCBWI Conference. Thank you for your kindness. This is episode number 360 of the podcast with Margarita Engel and Rafael Lopez. Margarita and Rafael together bring us Bravo, Poems About Amazing Hispanics, a book published both in an English-language version as well as a Spanish-language version. Most of the individuals Margarita voiced in her poems were unfamiliar to me upon first read, and this, Margarita shares, is intentional. We keep alive the memory and importance of those who come before us by continuing to speak their stories. And what Margarita and Rafael together share in Bravo speaks in many voices, through which many stories are kept alive for an entirely new generation of readers, learners, and thinkers. Here's episode number 360 of the podcast with Margarita Engel and Rafael Lopez. Welcome to the podcast, Margarita Engel, Rafael Lopez. I'm so excited that you're both here joining me tonight.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Margarita, this is my first time making your acquaintance, and I'm so excited. But for listeners that maybe don't know you as well, would you mind introducing yourself to the listeners?
Yes, I'm a Cuban-American author, mostly a poet. I used to write prose for grown-ups, but I find that I'm much happier if I write poetry for children. And I don't know what it is about writing for children, but I think it's that they're more open-minded and we can be much more creative when we write for children. Most of my books have been verse novels for older kids. A lot of them have been about Cuban history. The picture books are just a wonderful change for me. I absolutely have loved working on Bravo with Rafael Lopez, and on all the picture books that I've had the chance to do are a completely different experience.
Oh, I love that. That was a great answer. I feel like we're going to get along just fine. You ditched adults to work for children? This is wonderful.
Adults are really hard to please.
Amen to that. Rafael Lopez, would you like to say hi to everyone and give a little bit of your background too?
Hola. That's Spanish for how are you? No, I'm just kidding. So say hello. And yes, a little bit about me. I was born in Mexico City. My parents were architects. I always wanted to become an architect until I realized that mathematics were involved in this whole process. So I veered more, and I was more inclined to go into the art part. Fortunately, my parents were very supportive, and I ended up becoming an illustrator. And it wasn't until about 15 years into my career as an illustrator that I got a call to create the first picture book for children. And I was hooked from the very beginning. It was scary because I've never done a series that needed to have some kind of a continuity. But I've always loved challenges. And then when you find yourself lucky enough to work along people like Margarita Engel, and then things really get to be fun because she writes so poetically that allows for the imagination to flow and take it into different directions. So it's been a fun ride, Matthew. So hi to you guys. It's so much fun to work for you. You are my audience, and I love you guys. Yeah.
Oh, look at this. We are clearly feeling the love tonight. And I want to also point out to people listening that may not recognize this right away that you both are the ones that created Drum Girl Dream, that gorgeous book that just entranced all of us. I fell very hard in love with that book, as did many, many of my students. And I know many across the globe that did as well. So thank you for that beautiful gift you gave all of us.
Thank you. That was a really special book.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
What Rafael did with it was just incredible.
Mm. When you did that work together, did you express intention to want to do another work together? I'm so glad to see you both, your names both on Bravo. But is that something that, I mean, was that part of the plan? What a happy surprise, I feel.
You know, authors don't get to plan, editors plan. And so when the editor chose Rafael and said, well, we'll see if he has time, he's really busy, you know, and I just sit here with crossed fingers until he answered. So really, it's not up to the author. It's just such a privilege when the editor does choose exactly the right artist for the project.
Yes.
And I'm really fortunate that that the editor coordinates all that. It's teamwork.
Yes, it's a huge team that comes together. Rafael, what were you going to say?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Margarita for making my life sound so glamorous. You know, thank you, Margarita.
Just sitting around knowing that authors are crossing their fingers.
Just sit there and tell me, oh, let's see. Do I feel like working with Margarita again? Of course I do.
Oh, my.
Well, now you're laughing, but the letters that authors get from editors always say, let's keep our fingers crossed.
It's true.
Oh, really?
It's true. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, wow.
We watched, and in fact, when Rekha Simonson chose Rafael for Drum Dream Girl, we hadn't worked together before, but she said, it has to be him. He paints movement. This poem has movement. These people have to dance. You have to show music. You know, only Rafael can show that. And it was true. The book is full of movement.
They never told me that. No, I'm kidding. You know, it's true that they do try to do the best match. And I have done some music imagery before. But it's a combination of the fact that she writes in such a fun way that things could be interpreted in not very literal, but it allows you to just grow and interpret it in a very poetic way visually. And I think because I've been doing so much editorial work for so long where you grab an abstract and you have to interpret it visually to the client, that facilitated for me to read Margarita's poetic writing and go, oh, you know, I can take it this way or that way versus being exactly literal as to what this has to be. And the fact that it was about a dreaming girl that dreamed of becoming a drummer allowed for that jumping back and forth between her reality of being denied her dream and the beautiful possibilities that she could envision when she closed her eyes. So you couldn't go wrong with the story. It was so much fun. You know, you could just take it in different directions.
It's beautiful. The text, I mean, I think both of you, this is a testament to why picture books are standing as the works of art that they are. Drum Dream Girl, the text, Margarita, is just, it's beautiful. It is poetic and has rhythm to it. And then to see, as you're reading it, to fall into that rhythm and then to see the art be dancing and the bright, vibrant colors and the the moods that are conveyed. Yeah, it's beautiful. And then Raphael, to take that that art style is what I attribute most to you, how I've known you most from that, and the cazuela, the farm made stirred, and the maybe something beautiful. I know you for that style. To see you do the portraits that you did for Bravo, the poems about amazing Hispanics, was just something that really it really took my breath away. It really felt like something I'm looking at in like Time magazine or something. It looked editorial, like it read sophisticated that way, and it also, the way you captured, in particular for me, the people's eyes, with Margarita's text being that the language was that the individual speaking to the reader, it just felt like that was very affecting for me.
Well, I'm glad you see that. It was great to see that Margarita took it beyond just be a biography of a character, right? It
Yes.
was more about just capturing the spirit of the person, which really allowed it to be different, you know, because there are so many biography books about people. But the fact that she did it in a poetic way, and it was very brief, and it was just capturing the essence of the character, that person, really allowed for the same thing, a very, very personal interpretation of the person, you know. And some are very literal, and some are a little more like the pilot, where she's got clouds in front of her.
Yes.
So it just allowed you to go one way or the other. Again, you know, is that poetry of Margarita? So it's all her fault. I can say that for
It's
sure.
all her fault.
It's her fault that I'm having so much fun.
I love it.
Thank you. I have a passion for people who've been forgotten by history, especially people who've accomplished amazing things that and might have even been famous in their time, or maybe were never famous at all. They've just been overlooked by the history books. And when I write about them, I like to write about them in first person to make it a sort of time travel experience for the young reader, so that the child can feel like I met this person. You know, I went back in history and I met someone who did something amazing. And to that child, it's not important that the person isn't a household name. You know, that some of these people, the adults don't know their names, the teachers don't know their names. They've been forgotten. But the child doesn't care about that. The child cares about what they did that was amazing. And the only way to bring them back from having been forgotten by history is to write about them now.
Yes, beautifully put. And I think the way that you do write about them is in such a beautiful way of connecting with the child, with the reader. I'm picturing my readers, my like ages 5 to 10 that are learning about these individuals, and the way you have the voices express what they do is very much in that way of speaking to a child. It's not trying to, sometimes as adults, I feel like we have a way of bolstering the things that we've accomplished and trying to make what we sound, what we've accomplished feel important above everyone else. But this, there's something that feels so human and so almost humbling about the accomplishments of the individuals, that there are things that we can connect to, and there are accomplishments that are readily, I think, accessible and understandable from the children. And so that was something I found that was particularly effective in the way you wrote this.
I'm really seeking to just show the emotional essence of that person's life. What was it like? How did it feel? How did they think? And usually they were very independent thinkers. They did what they felt was right or what they felt was important, whether those around them did, you know, agreed or not. And I think that that's important for children to realize that there will be times when they might have to make a choice between what seems right and what everybody else thinks is important.
You know, for me, some of the challenges that this book presented that were really great, because I was able to do a more personal interpretation of the characters, was the fact, like Margarita stated, that they were so very little known about many of these characters, that when you try to do some research, there's very few photographs exist of these characters. And the few that you can find, in many cases, are so tiny, by the time you try to blow it up to really find what these people look like. They just get completely pixelated, Matthew. And this is where you go, wow, what am I going to do here? You know, so you have to go back to Margarita's writing and find what that person would have looked like or would have been like. And then you do this representation based on what she has written. So there was a lot of that personal input of, this is my interpretation of what this person looks like. In many cases, not all of them, but in many. And I was lucky to have a great editor and a great art director that allowed me for that freedom. And I think that we captured him quite well, though, in both ways, you know, literally and visually, though.
Yes, and wouldn't you say it's very different than when the story is about a child like Drum Dream Girl? Because it's not very often that we can find a subject like her, somebody who did something amazing while they were only 10 years old. Most of our biographical books are going to be about adults. And so the artwork must be very different. I know the poetry certainly is. To introduce, for instance, with Juana Briones, that her husband beat her, that's, you know, not for a very young child, and yet children are aware of things like that happening in the world as they get a little bit older. So it's kind of a challenge to find a balance when you write about adults.
I can understand that. And I think that's sort of where your talent sings as a poet, being able to select just the right words and present just what needs to be there.
Yeah. I wish I could write like Margarita, but that would be fun. I could be doing my own books. Believe me, it's just amazing, that talent. And I look at friends that can write, and I wish I'd had that talent. So to be paired with Margarita, and you know, no complaints right there. She can do that part. Okay.
It's funny because the author gets all these compliments that we shouldn't get. They're compliments for the artist. The kids come up to us and say, "Oh, I love your picture."
I love writing. You're such a great writer, and I have to just go, oh my gosh, you know, I hate to break your heart, but I'm not the person that wrote the story. So I do get the similar treatment too, and it's hilarious. So it's great. It's sweet.
I think we need to give a lot of credit to Laura Godwin also. You know, the editor really plays an important role in a book like this.
Yes. And I think she took some creative chances here, and I think they paid off because originally, Matthew, we were heading toward more of a traditional portrait. And I started thinking that this was not going to engage a new audience, an audience that is a little more digital savvy, a little more contemporary. And I didn't want this book to immediately feel age or you know, something from the past. I wanted to do something a little more contemporary. And I said, you know what, why not? Let's just do this a try. So I remember doing the first portrait that I try in this new direction was the Tito Puente one. And I sent it to her, I crossed my fingers and I said, you know what, she's gonna say no, this is crazy. This is totally like a departure from what we had envisioned. And I was so surprised when she called back and she goes, we love it, you're right. This is for this audience that we need to approach, the technology, the savviness, this and that and whatever, and that was it. That I just, you know, I just started developing something that I was having so much fun with it. And the one thing that I want to point out is that every single portrait, I wanted to make sure that there was eye contact, that the person was looking at the reader.
Yes.
Because I wanted these readers to see themselves and see their stories and maybe see themselves and maybe say within themselves, you know, I got a story to tell just like these people do. You know, this person is looking me in the eye. And I got something to say, too. Everybody has their own story, though. So hopefully we did that and we were able to do it successfully.
Well, and your use of color was brilliant because the cover is so welcoming that you just want to open it and read it. You know, you see each of these individual faces. You just want to open it and meet these people because these colors are just so warm and welcoming. And so many people are already in love with the frontispiece. See, I get compliments about it. The picture of the child lying down with the...
Oh, great, great. Just tell them that you did it. Oh, okay.
Words That's... falling onto her face. I get lots of compliments.
I love it.
I thought the texture that exists on these paintings, it reminded me a lot of some of the art that I've seen as I drive around Baltimore. Some of these, I mean, maybe I'm also drawing from being that we're working together right now, Raphael, I'm drawing from some of that mural art mm-hmm. that I know you're known for. But a lot of the the hard, solid lines and the bright colors that you're using here read so strongly like that to me. I think of the image of Port au Prince, mm-hmm. that image in particular, with the colors just singing from that book, and the way, mm-hmm. the penetrating way that she's looking straight at you. Mm-hmm. That, Margarita, do you have the book on hand? Is it possible to ask you to read a poem to us?
Oh, sure. Which one would you like?
Would you be willing to read that one to us? The experience in any of these, I think, to have someone read the poem to you while you're able to look at the illustration is something that is special. And I should say to people listening that Henry Holt is publishing two versions of this book, an English and a Spanish.
And that is just like a miracle.
Simultaneously. Yeah.
So people out there who don't think it's a big deal, it is. This is like a groundbreaking to have the book come out in two languages. And I just hope that the Spanish edition sells well so that the publisher is able to continue doing this. The request for a simultaneous Spanish edition actually came from the sales department, I'm told. And that's groundbreaking. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
From a design perspective, I love from a design perspective that these books are separate. I think there are times when we have these books where the English text and the Spanish text appear on the same page. And mm-hmm. sometimes things can get a little crowded, a little muddy, especially here when I think what you're trying to accomplish is to let the words be penetrating, to have them both. We'll have them both in our library. And I think that that's a really powerful thing. And you're right, what an unusual, but sort of groundbreaking thing for the publisher to do.
It is. And they should really be given credit for that bit, because there's kind of a stereotype that only small presses take a chance with Spanish editions. And at this point, that's not true, because Macmillan is big. So now this Port au Prince illustration is available in a poster for libraries too. So I hope you've got one of those.
I did not get one of those, but now I'm giddy to find out how I can.
Yes.
I'll be downloading that tonight.
Okay. It's called Two Languages at the Library. And I want to clarify to librarians who, you know, have 50 languages in their library, that this represents a specific person at a specific point in history. So we're not trying to limit it to two languages in modern times. But back when Port au Prince was the first Latina librarian in the New York public library system, it was groundbreaking for her to be able to use two languages. My journey to Nueva York has been a voyage made of stories that grow. I came to attend my sister's wedding, but I stayed, found work, and studied to become a children's librarian, the first Puerto Ricana ever hired in the entire New York public library system. How strange that I am the first in this city with so many two-language children who are so eager to read, so happy to learn. Nothing makes me feel more satisfied than a smile on the face of a child who holds an open book.
See how much fun that is?
I love that last line so much. Yeah. All of it, yeah. Do you have the Spanish edition handy? Would you like to read the... if not, it's okay.
I will run and get it.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know, the great thing about this book for me too, like you were saying, Matthew, is that they separated both English and Spanish, so it allowed for more room for the illustrator, which you find sometimes a little too constrained when they say, well, you know, you have to allow this much room for the text. And then part of the fun of being really, you know, to explore visually, it's limited. So I agree with you that it should be two separate books, two different versions, you know, the Spanish and the, I mean, for my own sake, perhaps it's a little selfish to say it, but it allows for more exploratory fun to do.
Yes,
but, you know, in this case, it allows for also those spot illustrations where you can
I
put
was
some
just
of,
going to
the,
say,
of
yes.
the poetry. Yeah.
Because your eye, well, go ahead.
One of the problems with the bilingual format, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Spanish tends to be a little bit more roundabout. so that the same poem will often be longer and take, you know, take up a different length page than the English version of the poem. And so suddenly you may not have matching pages, and it would get very crowded.
Yeah. Maybe Margaret, maybe the poet, the illustration of Pura Belpre would end up being as small as the little spot illustration, because there'll be so much type on the other side.
So much.
Yeah.
Well, like, whoa. Having that spot illustration, I was going to say, allows, as I'm reading it aloud, as I'm holding it in front of a child, as you read the books aloud, you have, you know, their eyes are darting back and forth between the words and that large full page illustration. And so to have that eye contact and then to go back to the words and to see another illustration that's supporting the ideas they're talking about, I think really solidifies the big picture as they're reading. So, yeah, again, leaving that space was wonderful. Margarita, thank you so much for running off to get the other copy of the book, too.
Okay, and I do want to just mention, I will read that poem if you have time, but I do want to just mention that to me, some of the most important people in this book are the ones whose names you've never heard of before, and that's because they're scientists, and they think it's very timely, right after the March for Science, to mention how few scientists achieve name recognition. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we know Einstein. How many other scientists can kids name?
Right.
They should know more. They should know about people like George Melendez Wright, who was the first scientifically trained wildlife biologist in the United States and established all of our modern wildlife management practices. He talked the lawmakers into stopping the killing of predators. They used to kill all the wolves, all the coyotes, all the bears, all the eagles. They killed pelicans in order to leave more fish for the fishermen. They fed the animals as if it were a zoo for people to watch, you know, for entertainment instead of having natural habitats. So someone like him, whose name is not well known, accomplished so much. He actually saved entire species, endangered species, from becoming extinct. Mm-hmm. And I think to children, that is a hero.
Yes, right. I would agree. Yeah. I think
what better role model?
That person's life reminds me of, I'll try to say the name, is it Luis Agassiz Fuentes?
Fuentes, yes.
To painter. Learn about him, yeah, this painter that at a time when, I mean, we've been in museums. I live right by D.C. I've seen all these museums that have the birds on display. And to know that that was a time when people were just capturing these birds and posing them. And he said, no, they need to live. I'm going to capture them and develop a painting style that I can capture them quickly so that, yeah, it just... Those sorts of things.
And that's by an independent thinker, someone who thought of something new and tried it. And it's not a criticism of Audubon that he killed the birds, because he was earlier. But by the time Fuentes came around, these, you know, birds were endangered, and he didn't want to kill them anymore. That was the standard practice for bird artists, and he tried something new, which was letting the birds live.
Yes. Yeah, there are many, many lives. You really took me to school, Margarita. I really enjoyed this book. I enjoyed going. I kept the back page marked so that I could read the poem that you wrote and then immediately read that extra paragraph you wrote about the person's life. I that's how I handled the book for me on my read through, going back and forth. And it really was a wonderful thing to have that first introduction, knowing that I'm going to continue to explore these lives too. And how, like you said in the beginning, when we talk about people's lives, it keeps them on our minds and keeps them, the word is not relevant. That's not the word I'm looking for, but it allows them to not be forgotten.
Well, and I think it inspires us to see, that it's okay to think independently and to try something new.
Yes.
We don't have to always do things the way they've been done. That change sometimes is good. I think it's important for children. And this book could have been 200 pages easily.
Right.
It's just a sampling of Latinos who've done amazing things and been forgotten by history, been left out of history. It's just the barest little, but hopefully now, people will start going to the library and saying, okay, I want to know more about other people too.
Yes, here I am. I thought you were leading into a book announcement with us. I was like, wait, are you and Raphael doing five more together? This is wonderful.
So, Margarita, I have a question. I'm curious. How do you choose these people? Knowing very consciously that there were so many you could pick. As you can see in the back, you keep mentioning all these other people that could have been mentioned on the book. Was there some kind of a agreement to who you were going to eventually cover,
Laura, the editor gave me a lot of leeway. She wanted some famous people to be included, that kids would recognize. So I don't lean towards thinking, oh, I want to write a biography of a sports hero or there's just certain things that I wouldn't have thought of on my own. And she suggested those. I did really want to focus on including a few scientists. That was my own idea. For instance, Inés Mexía, this plant explorer. I was trained as a botanist, so for me, this plant explorer, discovering 500 new species is not a small thing. Exploring the jungles of both Mexico and all of South America, that was a big deal, and she did it alone. And she should be well known. She should be famous. I also think that that page about her is not just a page for children. This is a page to inspire adults because she didn't start her field work until she was in her 50s. She didn't go to college until she was in her 50s. So that's a page for the grandma reading to the child. You
That's
know,
wonderful.
a never too late page.
Yeah.
Sorry, Matthew, I just took over the interview there briefly, but hey, I needed to know
Yeah,
this
I had
part.
it on my mind too, but I was my mind went to noticing how we were traveling up through history in this too, that I realized that the dates were going from a time longer ago, the 1700s, I believe, is where we start into more current time. But yeah, I don't. It always seems a wonder to me how anyone decides to narrow down any story. It must be that there's only room in a book to share so many things, and I'm sure that there were some hard decisions to make. But perhaps that there'll be an opportunity to speak of other lives soon.
Well, yeah, it does start with a friend of George Washington, and I think that's important because
Yes.
most Americans, not just children but adults, don't realize what a huge role Spanish-speaking people played in the U.S. War for Independence. Spain was an ally, and Spanish soldiers were at all of the major battles, and they came from they, you know, they. Their country still belonged to Spain, so when you say Spanish soldiers, they were actually Venezuelans and Mexicans and Peruvians and Cubans, and they were coming from all over the Americas to fight for U.S. independence. This just isn't something that's ever talked about. We talk about French allies. You hear about the French allies. You do not hear about the Spanish allies, and you've never heard the name of an important Spanish ally, an individual, the way you would hear about some of the French.
Well, now they know. Now they know about
I
one
say now they
person,
know.
right?
That's
Now
right.
they know. This is wonderful. Yeah. So a great opportunity to really bring this and to capture the daring character of the people and their essence and their spirit and share it with the young minds of the people, like you were saying. I mean they were not afraid to think differently and be independent thinkers, and what better things to pass on to a new generation, right?
And I ended with Tomas Rivera, who was very easy for me to choose because he was my creative writing professor at UC Riverside.
Wow.
He was the
I
yeah
wish I
he
was a
was
fly
the
on the wall
first
when you two talked and he gave you some advice.
But then, you know what the really hard poem to write was? The one at the end where I just listed lots and lots of names. That could have gone on for 200 pages also, because these are our modern people. And just to give you an idea of how long a project takes, a picture book project, I ended with Richard Blanco, the poet who was asked to read by President Obama to read at his second inauguration. And so that's how long ago I was thinking about all this and starting to work on it. And to me, that was groundbreaking. When Richard Blanco was asked to read at the inauguration, nothing like that had ever happened before. And it was so emotional. It was so important. I really wanted to honor some of these, you know, living people too, the people now, Juan Felipe Herrera, the first, you know, Latino poet laureate, but also not just writers, all sorts of people in all fields, just to show kids how many different things they could be interested in, go into, and there are no limits to what they can learn about and what they can accomplish.
Yes. From front to back, I love what this book accomplishes and how it's designed. And I wanted to bring up not only how beautiful that poem is that you write in the back there, but the letter that you start off addressing to readers in the beginning too, the way you've set the stage for all of this, I found really beautiful too, to say that the United States was forming and the geographic regions that you link to here might not have been known as the names that we know them now. But to recognize just the cultural similarities and the historical significance of these voices that we don't hear from often, I just felt like it was a really nice way to make introduction. It felt like it was the chance for us to hear your voice speaking out, as well as then later their voices.
Thank you. Well, I hope, say, a teacher reading this to students wouldn't skip that page, because it does clarify some important things about what's to come. And it is also my chance to let the kids know that I care about them, you know, why I'm doing
I think it's abundantly clear that you both care a lot about your readers, and I'm very grateful for that. Before I wrap up my time with you, Margarita, would you like to share that poem or any of your choosing, by all means?
Sure. The same one, Los Idiomas en la Biblioteca.
Yes.
Mi viaje a Nueva York ha sido un trayecto de historias nacidas con el tiempo. Llegué a la boda de mi hermana y me quedé. Encontré trabajo y estudié para ser una bibliotecaria para niños, la primera puertorriqueña empleada por el sistema de bibliotecas de Nueva York. Qué raro ser la primera en esta ciudad con tantos niños bilingües, tan felices cuando leen, tan contentos cuando aprenden. Nada me hace sentir más feliz que ver la sonrisa en la cara de un niño que tiene un libro abierto en las manos.
Here is to more books written in the languages of all of our readers, to more books coming out this way that open access not only to researching and seeking new understandings, but also in the languages and the formats that all of our readers can access. I'm so grateful to both of you for coming on tonight. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rafael, too.
Oh, Rafael, thank you. Before I go, I'm going to ask you each this question. Rafael, do you mind if I ask Margarita first? Oh, we might have lost Rafael. I don't hear Rafael.
I thought you were saying goodbye.
Well, Margarita, I'll ask you, and if we don't hear him pop back in, then
I'm still here. Can you hear me, guys?
I can hear you now.
There we go. Okay. Yes.
Were you had to get tissues. You were probably openly weeping with how beautiful that poem was.
How could you tell? You saw the video, right?
I know. I was... I know how it affects me. I'm just saying, I don't think we're that different. So I'll end with this. Margarita, I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Just that if they love to read, they can write too. And I hope that they will enjoy not only reading poetry, but I hope that they will, as they get older and they have their own interests, that they try writing their own stories and their own poems too.
Yes, beautiful. And Raphael, same question. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Yes, I think that it's that there are so many ways to make a difference in all kinds of times, times of good and times of plenty and times of challenges, such as now. I mean, we have to keep hope alive. You have to continue to thrive for us, all of us, to get along and make a difference in your own way. Not necessarily you have to be a writer or an illustrator or a scientist. You can choose whatever you want to do. But do it in the interest of humankind, of your fellow people, your fellow friends. And, you know, it's just all about, you know, keeping us all together and motivating each other and helping each other out. And it's the only way to make a beautiful world, which is what we are, a tiny little speck in this vast universe. So might as well just all get along and do the best we can.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 350 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. And Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with the books they'll love. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect any ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Up on the podcast, David Robertson shares When We Were Alone, a story about a difficult time in history and, ultimately, a story of empowerment and strength. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.